AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. We are going to add some traction to our regular conversation about used machinery. Then let's hear the latest on just how much access federal agencies have to your private property. We'll talk about enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act. And what? Wait, seriously? Cornering the snake venom market?
From Emancipation Day, Observance Day in the USA via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with machinery Pete Greg Peterson, and he'll have special guest Eric McPherson from Dawson Tire. Then we'll chat with Farm Journal wordsmith Chris Bennett, and later the NCBA Director of Government Affairs and Market Regulatory Policy, Tanner Bamer. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
All right, Davis. Hey, that was quite the mouthful there. Emancipation Woo! Day, Observation Day.
Well, you know, a lot of radio shows have just phoned it in on a day
yeah.
like today. Not us.
Right?
Not us. We are loaded up.
Loaded. No question about it. Happy Juneteenth, everybody. Don't go to the mailbox. It's a federal holiday,
uh-huh.
and the markets are closed. Markets
yeah.
are closed, man.
Yeah.
yeah.
Either that or this is, we're headed for a day of ultra range bound trade. You know what I mean?
ultra. ultra. Open steady, traded steady, closed steady.
Steady.
That's yeah. that's what it's going to look like.
Yes.
All right. Welcome. Welcome. I'm Chip. That is Davis. And
yes, hello.
Like Davis said, we've got quite a lineup coming your way today. You like what I did in the open? We're going to add some traction.
With the traction. Yeah.
Yeah, traction to the machinery conversation. Yeah, with Eric from Dawson Tire. That was good. Come on.
That was really good. That was really good. Very well done. So yeah. I was
And actually real uh-huh. quick, real quick.
Yeah.
Machinery Pete has got some very important news. Important
Ooh.
Breaking news for you in the upcoming segment. It's something that you want to hear.
Okay.
No doubt.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Speaking of traction and, you know, yeah. machinery and stuff.
Yeah.
So I played a gig last week. Middle
okay.
of the week kind of a thing, corporate
yeah.
gig. But they had
yep.
it was in a barn, I guess you'd call it, big tin shed, really nice one.
Right?
But by the end of the night, when it was time for everybody to clear out and go,
yeah.
you know, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, and the night was over.
Yeah.
I hear this. Dude fired up a fully restored Ultra Cherry 4020.
Yeah.
And just drove it into the barn.
Said,
shut her down and parked it. And that's how we knew.
Well,
I guess that's the end of that. Yeah. Yeah. But she was a beaut. Oh,
we're putting the decorations away. It must be time to go.
That was exactly it. It was exactly it. Well, I talked to the guy, and his father had bought it new,
yeah.
and it's since been restored. And they put a new motor in it. You know, the whole thing.
Very cool.
And I said, you know, you could probably turn a pretty penny for that. He wouldn't dream of selling it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't dream yeah. of it.
Those are family treasures. In so many ways. And we've talked with Greg Peterson about those stories and how they just mean that piece of equipment is going to be staying in that family for a long, long time.
Indeed.
So,
indeed.
Yeah. yeah.
Lots of, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what's on your mind today?
Well, there was an awful lot of news last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we did a pretty good job of digesting it all on the free-for-all itself. Russia widening its attack on Ukrainian food supplies while Ukraine is hoping that maybe the European Union will let them join. Heat records broken in the past, in the past week. We've got an explosion at an LNG export terminal. Dude,
yeah.
The housing market continues to firm up. I mean,
The Wall Street Journal last week coming out and saying, listen, maybe we should think twice about exporting energies.
Yes.
You know, when we start talking about embargoes, with the way that this economy is going and the shock that that would create around the world if we would just stop exporting energies, I mean, this smells like Carter era stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the type of if you're looking for what the results might be to putting any kind of an export embargo in place, just go back and look at history.
Right.
The results are pretty clear. The economic hardship that is caused in other countries because of a U.S. embargo on an export comes mm-hmm. rippling right back at us.
Yep.
And it gets here before you know it. So keep that in mind when we talk about these export bans. But, you know, it is concerning because one of the other things that we heard from President Biden last week was concern about the European citizens, was concern about the average Russian citizen, and that mm-hmm. the sanctions on Russia might be impacting the average Russian more than the oligarchs in Russia. And then he acts mad that U.S. citizens are worried about inflation and that U.S. citizens see inflation as a big deal.
Yes.
It's a strange time we are living in, Davis. Strange
it really
time,
is.
Dude. Yep.
Well, and Sean Haney made the point on the Friday free-for-all, too. Man, I don't think we've seen the worst of it yet either.
Yeah, no.
Opinion polls say, yeah, okay, the general public believes we're in a recession. regardless of how they define that, they're feeling the pinch already. And if the pinch gets worse, which we believe it's going to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we talked with Vince Malanga last week ahead of the Federal Reserve's decision to raise the Fed funds interest rate by 0.75 point. And you know, at that time, when we talked with Vince, it was the market consensus that it was going to be a 0.5 point increase. Fast forward just more than 24 hours from that conversation with Vince, mm-hmm. and the 75 basis point increase was fully anticipated. And Wiesmeyer said it on Friday in the Farmer Forum, somebody inside of that FOMC meeting leaked it to the Wall Street Journal to start putting out the warnings that it could be a 75 basis point increase mm-hmm. in that Fed funds rate. And that got the market ready for it, Davis. Yep. It was a weird week.
Well, it really was. And then, you know, right down to the weather. I know that there were some spotty brownouts and blackouts in parts south of us.
Yeah.
So far, I've been unaffected. I'm sure you have as well. But because of the heat, the extra pull on the power grid there,
right,
exacerbated by drought and the inability of the hydrogen to keep up, and then the tragic story. I don't think we'll ever probably really know the exact number of beef cattle that perished because of this heat wave.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked with Greg Henderson from Drovers about that on last Thursday. Really a sad story. We also talked about some of the other trends out there. One of the trends that we talked about, increasing in slaughter capacity at a time when market cattle numbers are going to be trending down. Go back and listen to that conversation. I think it was really important. All right, buddy. Hey, like we said, the markets are closed, but we've got a heck of a show coming your way. Up next, we've got Machinery Pete right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com, call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Juneteenth celebration. Markets are closed today. Federal offices are closed. Don't go to the mailbox. There's not going to be any mail, but we've got fresh information for you here on AgriTalk, including our regular Monday conversation with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well, Chip. How are you doing?
Doing real fine, real fine. You know, Greg, we talk so often about the trends that are happening in the used machinery markets and how tractors have been so hot. And some of those tractors have got some hours on them. Some of them got some age on them. They're still bringing good dollars. And, you know, one thing that we haven't talked a whole lot about, and when you and I first started having conversations, we would almost always start with, does it have good tires on it? Is there good rubber on it?
Right.
We hardly talk about that anymore. Why?
Well, it's, I tell you, ag tires and the condition, and the audience knows it out there, Chip. Everywhere I go, we talk about it. It's a huge issue. It's only becoming more important. And this is why I'm so excited, because we have big news to announce today, Chip. Actually, tomorrow, our monthly Machine Repeat auction at machinerypete.com. We're introducing a new feature, folks. I am just beyond excited about this, but we'll be incorporating within the event a new monthly Machine Repeat Ag Tire and Wheel auction with our great friends at Dawson Tire and Wheel. Now we're going to be joined by the CEO, founder, and owner of Dawson Tire and Wheel, Eric McPherson from out in Gothenburg, Nebraska. All Eric, right. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you, Greg?
Well, I'm doing great, Eric. And again, so excited about this new thing. We touched base a while back. You reached out. And Eric, you told me you had a dream. And for the first time you explained it, I thought, my gosh, that is like the best idea I've heard in a long time. Let's just tell the listeners out there what your dream was.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. And thanks, Chip. Good to be with you guys today. Well, being in the ag tire and wheel space, we planted our flag really deep in ag tires and wheels, you know, 25 years ago, and pretty well all we do. And what I kept thinking, Greg, was that ag tires and wheels, you know, there's no machines that are worth very much without them. and yet they're just a kind of an evil necessity. And I wanted to bring them to the forefront. I also wanted to give them, attention. And the other thing I recognized, Greg, was that there's a lot of ag tires and wheels out there that have a lot of value on equipment dealers' lots and that farmers could use, and yet they're just being ignored. So when I reached out to you, it was like, how do we bring these things to the forefront? How do we give them some the love and attention they deserve? Because they're not getting any cheaper.
Right. No, and it's, you know, I've been watching, you know, I've been covering auctions 32 plus years now, and it was frankly kind of surprised and frustrated me as an observer of the marketplace to see as ag tires and wheels the vital piece they are in the market. But when it comes to marketing them, they were always just like an afterthought, which didn't make sense to me. You know, you'd have a big auction and you've got these nice condition tires and they were just kind of like an add-on, and we're going to change that. So we're making this, we're bringing this front and center, folks. So tomorrow on our Machine Repeat monthly online auction, right at noon central, after the sale has started around 11, we're going to bring on 15 sets of tires from Dawson Tire and Wheel, which Eric, you guys have been at it 25 years. You carry all brands. And folks, there's nothing. These are 12 sets of new tires, all brands. These aren't like a, you know, an, you know, not trying to get rid of anything.
We're They're not factory to, rejects, Greg. Is that no, what you're saying?
These are all new, 12 sets of new tires. Folks, we're just bringing this front and center. And Eric, what I love about Dawson Tire and Wheel and you folks out there, we've known each other for quite a while now. Your commitment to this space is deep, so deep that last year you guys came out with a new app called TreadSure, where basically you built a database of every ag tire and the tread depth with the idea that getting at this issue of like, well, is it 60%? Is it 50? Is it 40? Let's take the willy-nilliness out of that. So using TreadSure app, and folks, if you don't have it on your phone, go download this app. It's fantastic. It allows you or a dealer to accurately measure tread depth. So now, for example, on our sale tomorrow, again, starting at noon, you've got 12 new sets of tires, but the three sets of used tires are all TreadSure verified. So you don't have to wonder if it's 70%, 50. Speak to that commitment, Eric, that you brought to making, verifying used tires in this way.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. We work with equipment dealers all across North America. So it's one of our specialties, you might say. Mm-hmm. And they always were asking us, how do we know when we got salespeople in the field, you know, farmers, producers trying to trade in equipment, how do we know if a tire's 30% or 80%? Because when you're looking at a, you know, 9R four-wheel drive John Deere tractor, you can misvalue that tractor 35,000 bucks by right. calling a 50% tire 90%, and that happens a lot.
Right.
So it was really that we just need to make this easy for people to understand what a tire really is, because it changes the value of the equipment, doesn't it, Greg?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm a database guy, compiling auction prices all these years. That's why I loved what you've done with TreadSure. And again, you know, what we're starting with, Eric, again, on the sale tomorrow, again, starting at noon, 15 sets of tires, 12 new sets, folks. But as we take baby steps forward and grow this concept, Eric, and again, shine the light on it, you know, every month on our Machine Repeat TV show and talk about it, eventually, you know, we'll loop in our dealer friends,
sure,
the tires that they have for sale. And then also eventually the farm audience here, for ag tires and wheels that you folks have
this
for sale.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Greg, I want to let me talk to Eric for just a moment, because as you guys are discussing this, I'm thinking to myself, you know, we talk about technology and agriculture all the time, and we talk about the technology that's in the engine. We talk about technology in the cab, technology in the planter that we're pulling, technology in the seed. There's as much effort to build in the technology and to get performance out of those ag tires as there is in the engine, as there is in the cab, as there is in the planter. Isn't that right, Eric?
That's absolutely right, Chip.
So talk about how that has changed your market over the years.
Oh, we're going to run out of time, aren't we? well, they become, you know, the big thing about farm equipment is it's gotten bigger and it goes faster. It carries more weight, and the tires have really had to keep up with it. Tire manufacturers, I think, have done a really good job, but again, it's increased the value of those tires and along with the value of the equipment. You know, the IF tires, the VF tires, yeah, carrying more weight at lower pressure, managing compaction better, all of those things. And again, I just feel like the tire and wheel space needs some attention, guys.
That's awesome. Folks, and you know, here's the thing. Chip and I, we've been talking weekly now about the rising price of used equipment. And by the way, this past week, price is still going up. It's unbelievable. But folks, in this market, you have to look ahead. And if you're thinking, you know, tax minimization for equipment purchases, it's hard to get new iron, and even the used equipment's going nuts. Well, here with our Machine Repeat monthly online auction now, we're going to be introducing this monthly, you know, ag tire and wheel segment. Again, these are new tires or verified by an industry player, Dawson Tire and Wheel, on the used side, the tread depth, tons of pictures, video. So get aggressive here and, you know, click that bid button tomorrow and going forward. This, I'm so excited about this partnership we're starting off with here.
And Eric, I'm assuming that if there's a buyer out there that's interested in a certain tire, they can contact you and get the information on what that tire is going to bring to them.
Yeah, absolutely, Chip. And my cell number is right on the listings. So I'm perfect. You know, super happy to talk to and have been talking to some folks about it. So yeah, glad to talk about them. Glad to, you know, Greg, one of the things you and I talked about, we want this to be the place people buy with confidence. It's not some
trusted bubbled
up sidewalls. You know, if there's some stubble on it, you're going to know ahead of time.
Right.
We're not cleaning out fence rows. Yeah. We're selling stuff we sell every day.
Yeah, and, this is and beautiful.
We want people to know that they can be confident, and Dawson's going to take care of them.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Greg, this is quite the addition to the Machinery Pete monthly auction, buddy. Congrats.
Hey, thanks, Chip. It's going to be great fun.
Starts at noon tomorrow, June 21st. MachineryPete.com. Check it out. Look for the live auction. Hey, we're going to be right back. Chris Bennett, Farm Journal, up next on AgriTalk. President Joe Biden on June 17th, 2021, signed a bill declaring Juneteenth as a national holiday. That was 2 days shy of 156 years since Union Major General Gordon Granger and his troops arrived in Galveston, Texas to read the Emancipation Proclamation. That was about 2.5 years after slaves were freed across much of the South and just more than 2 months after the end of the Civil War. Yeah, news traveled slow then. And this is the first year the grain markets have been closed in observance of Juneteenth, which is just a mashup of June and the 19th. The date in 1865 when Major Granger rode into Galveston. The first Juneteenth celebration was held in 1866, and it's been an annual celebration since that time, even if this year's Juneteenth is just the second time it's been celebrated as a federal holiday and the first time the CME grain and livestock markets have been closed in observance of the end of slavery. I'm not going to downplay the significance of the day. It is clearly a day worthy of a national celebration. But hey, I'm a markets guy too. And the addition of a 3-day weekend for the markets between Memorial Day and the 4th of July is a new dynamic that the market is going to have to figure out. Will 3 3-day weekends in just 6 weeks lessen the importance of a lost day of trade? Will traders treat the holiday more like the rather benign Memorial Day weekend? Or will Juneteenth have the fireworks potential of the 4th of July?
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal Davis Michelson here. Chip Flory also as well.
Yeah,
in
baby.
Addition to Chip. Hey. Chip, we've got a real treat coming up for the listeners. I love talking to this guy, Farm Journal wordsmith Chris Bennett. I was talking to somebody about him just the other day. You know, whenever we talk to him, it feels a little bit like we've got Mark Twain on the line. You know, kind of a Sam Clemens thing.
Yes.
This guy tells a story in a way that no one else can tell a story. Chris Bennett, welcome to AgriTalk. Thanks for spending some time with us today, buddy. How you doing?
Davis, good morning. Privilege being on here with you, man. On here with you and Chip and producer Joe. Yes, sir.
All right.
Appreciate having you.
Davis, you know, he is the wordsmith at Farm Journal, but he's also a heck of a good reporter. We can't forget that.
That he is. Yeah. And along those lines, Chris, usually we talk about specific stories. I want to speak a little bit more generally with you today about something I've pulled from your writing for my landowner newsletters from time to time. You've been keeping a real close eye and found some compelling stories about government access and surveillance on private land. Can you talk to me about some of the trends that maybe you've observed on that front?
Yes, sir. Davis, this continues to churn. I've spoken with yourself and Chip on this before. It continues to revolve. What's going on is a breach many Americans would consider of their fundamental rights regarding private land. The bottom line, when you cut through all the bull, is that the government, the federal government, claims the right to have complete, and when I say complete, that's what I mean, complete access to your private land regarding access and surveillance, right? The only exception to that, according to the feds, is your house, your person, your papers, your effects, those things described in the Fourth Amendment. They say that beyond that, nothing is protected. When you open the ball on that, that means whether you own 5 acres or 5,000 acres, the government can go on there at will. They can stay on there as long as they want to, and they can get up to any activity that they want. A question your listeners might have is, who does that mean when you say the government? That means anyone from an alphabet agency has the right, according to the Supreme Court, and this has been done twice in court, 1924 and 1984, backed by the Supreme Court, they have total right of access to your land. At the state level, that's not correct. Your state agencies in at least 6 or 7 states can't gain access to your private land because of state constitutions. Even most state officials in most states have access to your land. However, overarching all of that is the federal access to your land. And when you get specific, when you get granular, that means that yes, they can put as many cameras as they want without warrant, without reasonable suspicion, without the nod of a judge. Once the cameras are there, they can monitor your activity, leaving and entering your land. They can take pictures, they can take rolling video. They can stay without any time on the clock. When you start getting this all in a big giant ball and trying to unravel it strand by strand, Davis, it's extremely alarming for the fundamental rights laid down by our forefathers.
And not only that, go ahead, Chip.
I was just going to say, Chris, it's one thing for a federal agent from one of those alphabet agencies to come onto your ground to have a conversation with you. It is completely different when they start putting up cameras to surveil what you're doing when they're not there.
Correct, Chip. And listen, I know that we all know people that work for government agencies. We know game wardens, and these people are very decent and would not do that to our land. However, right? Mm-hmm. We're concerned not about them. We're concerned about the rogue actors. And that is always the method. That's always the mechanism by which government authority continues to creep. Let me be very blunt here. We are actually at the stage in U.S. history. We have actually entered a phase when the right of government, according to them, to access your land and watch you is assumed. It is assumed. In other words, they claim that this is the pattern. This is the setup, the framework that was laid down by Thomas Jefferson and Johnny Adams, our forefathers. This is what they meant when they put down the Bill of Rights. However, this will make it back in time to the Supreme Court. And Davis, as you know, there are specifics in particular states with specific cases that are grinding. And more than likely, I would say within a couple of decades, possibly quite sooner, one of these is going to bounce to SCOTUS, and those black robes are going to have to determine this once again. And when you add in the nuclear factor of modern technology and the ability to, you know, literally watch you when you go to the bathroom on your land, this one is huge. There, we all know our watchdog media has turned into a lapdog media. They continue to ignore this whole open fields issue. And that is one of the problems. I mean, a New York Times reporter could take this and win a Pulitzer Prize, but they would rather, at this point at least, for the most part, ignore what is going on.
Well, let's shift gears just a little bit. Quite literally, a 5,000-strong tractorcade that paid a little visit to Washington, D.C.
Shoot, Davis. You know, when you're talking about 1960s and 70s and when the farm economy became or started to trend toward becoming shambolic, in 1969, a group of, I think it's about 150 farmers in West Central Illinois took off for D.C. on open cab tractors. They were all on open cab tractors. I think one of them had a cab.
Wow.
All of them. I think 26 of them made it to D.C. They were arguing for parity. They wanted a market price that allowed them simply to have a survivable income. That 69 tractor drive then triggered more later in the 70s. In 1977, and this is one of the great shames of the U.S. agriculture industry, and I certainly put myself at the top of the list because we have, for the most part, forgotten what happened. Certainly, we've forgotten the particulars. But in 77, the boys in Campo, Colorado, created the American agriculture movement. And that was driving toward parity and toward country of origin labeling. And they began to trigger these tractorcades to go to state capitals and make state politicians aware of their plight. That developed into the 1979 Major League Tractorcade, where 5,000 farmers plus campers, pickup trucks, fuel trucks, you name it, snaked across the country from four spots toward D.C. And I wrote a story on it, and one of the gentlemen I focused on was the guy in Happy, Texas, in the panhandle named Don Kimbrell, who was literally, he's still alive. He's a character pulled out of Lonesome Dove. He drove open cab all the way from Happy, Texas to D.C. Curiously enough, he didn't even wear gloves, by the way. This is in January, February. So that's the kind of guy he was. But once they got there, they stayed for months. I mean, some of them stayed for months. And they put all of this on the table for other farmers. A lot of the legislation that we have today that protects farmers was triggered in some way by that movement back in 1979.
Chris, we can get more of your work on agweb.com. Just give us a little preview here. Not too many details, because we do want the listeners to get there, because there's nothing like reading a Chris Bennett yarn spun. The insane tale of a buck wild scheme to corner the venom market. Give us the highlights. Give us a little teaser on this one.
Did you know, I bet y'all did. We all did, I think, in the 1980s, saw the movie Stand By Me.
Yeah.
This is essentially Stand By Me with a wild teenager placed in 1956. Ron Golubin was in North Carolina in 1956. He was he held somewhat of a fascination for snakes. He found out that they were paying $400 per ounce for venom at the time, anti-venom research. And he decided he would go into the bush, right into the sloughs by himself, sneak out without his parent permission. And he spent a whole summer catching large cottonmouth, milking, and then taking the venom home in a tumbler where he'd pour it out on the glass, let it dry. And once it was dried, then he'd razor blade it into a mason jar and then wanted to sell it at the end of the summer. Long story short, things did not turn out like he hoped for his venom harvest. But the idea, fellas, that he would be in a slough by himself, trapping these things on the bank is enough to, if that don't get your blood going, you're dead. You have to be dead if that doesn't get your blood going.
That's right. That's exactly right, Chris. I mean, I'm a markets guy. I remember covering Ferruzzi trying to corner the soybean market, but that story has got nothing to the story of trying to corner the snake venom market. Wow.
Right. Because we all know, you know, Davis knows, know, your listeners know the visceral reaction you get when you're confronted with a snake. I mean, it's one thing to watch one from afar, but when you have to pick one up and you're talking about a pit viper, then that changes the whole calculus right there.
Hey, head over to agweb.com. Get all of Chris Bennett's great stories there at agweb.com. Chris, it was great to talk with you, buddy. Thanks.
Hey, Chip Davis, thank y'all for the opportunity. Take care.
All right, Davis and I are going to be back to wrap up the Juneteenth episode of AgriTalk in just a moment.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's June 21st. Online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory, on this Juneteenth celebration day. Markets are closed, but we've got the issues covered for you. And covering the issues means taking a look at something that happened last week. The Lower Food and Fuel Act was passed by the House, and there was supportive comments after the House voted in favor of the bill, but there were also some that were disappointed in the passage of the bill, and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is on that list. Tanner Bamer is the Senior Director of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and he joins us now to discuss it. Tanner, welcome to AgriTalk.
Thanks, Chip. Always good to be here.
Good. Okay. The reason for NCBA's disappointment is the special investigator at USDA, right?
That is correct. That was the primary basis for our opposition to this package, which is unfortunate because while, you know, we do have positions on a lot of the things that were in that bill, there were some packages in there that we have been supportive of, like the Butcher Block Act. But unfortunately, Democratic leadership decided to insert this poison pill special investigator, and that led us to not be able to support this package. In fact, we were pretty vocal in our opposition to it.
Why was it the poison pill for you?
Well, you know, this concept of establishing a special investigator for competition matters is really rooted in some of the price disparities that we saw between box beef and fed cattle in the aftermath of both the Holcomb fire and the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, you saw a Packers and Stockyards investigation into that matter. You saw a Justice Department investigation into that matter. And we haven't really heard what the results of that DOJ investigation was, or if that investigation is still ongoing. And as a result, there's been a lot of frustration on Capitol Hill and certainly within the industry. As NCBA, we'd certainly like to see the results of that as well. Don Schiefelbein, when he testified before the House Agriculture Committee a couple months ago, said it best, you know, in order for us to, before we proceed on any legislative solutions here, we need to A, know if there was a problem, and B, if so, what the extent of that problem is. And but if we're trying to legislate solutions to issues we don't fully understand, it's not going to result in good public policy. And unfortunately, that's exactly what Congress opted to do with this piece of legislation.
Okay. All right. There are those that look at the inclusion of this special investigator in this, this really a seven-part package of bills. They look at this as going back about a year ago when USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack said that they were considering or would be pursuing vigorous enforcement of Packers and Stockyards. Now, some are looking at your or at NCBA's disappointment in passage because of the special investigator as a sign that NCBA is against the Packers and Stockyards Act. Address that.
Yeah, no. So NCBA has a long and storied history of support for the Packers and Stockyards Act and really any of those statutes that are supposed to govern fairness in the marketplace. We support robust enforcement of all of those, including the Packers and Stockyards Act. What we want to make sure we're doing, though, is that we're directing that enforcement in a way that makes sense. The Packers and Stockyards Division, which is an agency of USDA that has been around in some form or fashion since the act was passed over 100 years ago, is charged with enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act. And they do a really good job of enforcing the act in its entirety, right? It's not just competition matters like this new office, although that is part of it. It's also fair trade practices, scale certifications, things of that nature. And they not only look at Packers, they look at livestock auctions, dealers, and some other entities as well. So they're looking at the act through a very holistic lens. And they also have a dedicated competition branch that looks specifically at the exact same issues that this special investigator would be looking into. The special investigator bill further doesn't really give a whole lot of new authority to USDA. The Packers and Stockyards Division currently has the ability to pursue litigation in the event that some of these violations they may find warrant further legal action. They can do that through the U.S. Attorney's Office. They also can unilaterally bring administrative remedial action in the forms of some financial penalties and other administrative sanctions that they can bring against violators of the Packers and Stockyards Act. And they can utilize subpoena power currently in their investigative work as they're trying to make those determinations as to whether or not a violation did or did not occur. So this office that we're creating is duplicative. It's also unfunded, which means that there's no dedicated funding to this office. They're going to have to take resources away from other critical mission areas at the Agricultural Marketing Service. Things like this cattle contract pilot program that we've been advocating for. Things like the Packers and Stockyards Division itself, the Livestock, Poultry, and Grain Market News Division that implements livestock mandatory reporting. Mm-hmm. You know, by Packers and Stockyards' own estimates, they are 40% understaffed, 52% underfunded. And in 2021, only about 1% of their caseload was called, was attributed to competition matters. So this office is duplicative. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If you want to have robust enforcement, which everyone in the industry should be supportive of, and NCBA certainly is, let's make sure that we are staffing up the existing agency. Let's make sure that we are giving them the funding and the resources that they need to properly enforce the act, rather than creating more bureaucratic red tape, more Washington, D.C. power, and ultimately resulting in less effective enforcement of the statute.
All right. Gotcha. Message received there, Tanner. No doubt about it. Does it stand a chance of passing the Senate?
You know, the Senate Agriculture Committee did notice a markup in their committee, which will take place next Wednesday, on this special investigator bill, Senate side companion, and the Fisher-Grassley bill that NCBA has been opposed to for a couple years now. And so we do expect that the Senate Ag Committee will hear that. If the vote goes very similar to the House, which we have no reason to believe that it won't, it will most likely get marked up by the committee. But from there, the math to get passed becomes a lot more tricky, right? If the special investigator bill were to go to the Senate floor by itself, there is a possibility you could get enough senators to get to that 60 vote threshold that you need to invoke cloture and vote on final passage of any bill in the U.S. Senate. But as my boss, Ethan Lane, says all the time, the most precious commodity in Washington, D.C. is floor time in the U.S. Senate. Yep. The likelihood of them moving that by itself is very slim. So then they got to start packaging it together with other stuff. And then once you start to Christmas tree out a bill like that, it just tends to collapse under its own weight.
Gotcha. Tanner, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
You bet. Absolutely.
That's Tanner Bamer, Senior Director, Government Affairs for NCBA. Hey, come back this afternoon. Chad Hart from Iowa State right here on AgriTalk.